I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Welcome once again to the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one and only official UK Seahawks podcast. As this week, myself, Stuart Court, is joined by just one of the other two guys, as Ross is sunning himself on a beach somewhere, and Adam is slaving away, working away before New York in 3 weeks. How are we, Mr. Nathan?
Not too bad in all things bar Seahawks, which I guess overall isn't too horrific.
Yeah. Well, all things bar Harry Kane and Doug Baldwin, I'd guess, yeah?
Well, I mean, Harry Kane, obviously just the world's greatest human, closely followed by Doug Baldwin, but it would be even better if I found out he had fully functioning groins and was able to go on the weekend. I mean, in a footballing perspective there, obviously.
Yep, so we are here yet again and talking in negative surroundings after the Seahawks defeat on the road in Tennessee, in Music City in Nashville, where the Seahawks went down 33-27 after what started off as a game full of punts and three and outs on both sides of the ball, exploded in the second half, more so for the Titans than anything. But here is how all the Seahawks scores sounded via Steve Rabel and Seattle Radio.
Third and goal at the four. Again, Wilson out of the shotgun. He's going to roll right. Going to fire toward the goal line. Ball is caught on the ground. Touchdown! Seahawks, Doug Baldwin on a diving catch at the pylon. First and 10 at the 27 of Tennessee. Steps up in the pocket. Throws down the seam. Luke Wilson. Touchdown! Seahawks! It's Luke Wilson on a high catch over his head, falling into the end zone, and the Seahawks climb back in it. Lockett is back in the game. Slots on the left side. Jimmy Graham standing up, tight end on the right. Russell empty backfield, awaiting the snap from Justin Britt. He takes it. Four-man rush. Steps up. Throws inside. It's caught. Paul Richardson. Touchdown. Seahawks on a beautiful slant route. And Russell drove that ball into number 10 from 8 yards out. The Seahawks are chipping away.
It's despite the late flurry of action from the Seahawks offense, which is very unfamiliar compared to what had come before it so far in the 2017 season, the Seahawks did fall, as I say, 2-1-2 and return home this week to face the Colts. But that was, yet again, one which wasn't much fun, despite the near 900 yards and all that, Adam.
It was one of the worst. I don't know what it was, but it felt just a very deflating start, which was then punctuated with a really nice moment when we scored a touchdown towards the end of the first half, to then only go into the halftime break being a bit deflated again because we conceded a stupid field goal, which they just marched all over us. And then you got pumped again with a really nice touchdown drive to Chris Carson, which I think we're probably saying is one of the best drives we've had of all year, which isn't saying much, but still better than nothing. And then they just went and pissed it up the wall there's nothing else I can say apart from that, really. They just got Seahawked by the Titans, who looked like a younger, fresher, more modern version of us.
Yeah, they definitely look like the 2013 to 14, maybe 2012 version of the Seahawks with the two physical running backs and the mobile, accurate and decisive guy at quarterback. But before we move on, focus too much on what the Titans did, we'll start at the quarterback positions. Russell Wilson, 29 for 49, 373 yards, 4 touchdowns, and he was sacked once. He also ran for a further 26 on 7, not so much attempts as panic stations. How was Wilson for you on Sunday, Adam?
I thought he improved a lot. I thought the first half he was very poor, and some of the throws were just really errant and very high very often, which I think a lot of people suggest often means there could be something medical going on there. And it got better, but the whole stat line read like a Matt Stafford at his worst stat line, even with the 4 touchdowns. You know, normally it's, I guess, 4 interceptions and not 4 touchdowns, but you can see that, well, we know full well that's not the game that the coaches want to play. And I mean, throwing like 50 times is pretty wild considering it was a close game for 2.5 quarters.
Yeah, there's a stat where if he throws for 350 or less, he's 4-0. But when he throws for over 350, he's lost every single game. It's his second most passing yards in a game in Wilson's career. The other one coming in the Atlanta playoff game a few years ago when he brought the team almost all the way back, which he possibly had a shot for on Sunday. But yeah, it was just, I mean, in the first half, it was that the word again was execution. They just, especially on the one to Doug Baldwin, where he had a lot of open space if he comes down with the ball, it's a worrying lack of execution in early in games, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I think I said to you that when we were running in the first half, like we were running three and outs just because we didn't seem that we could do anything, whereas the Titans were running three and outs, but you could tell they had a purpose. Like, I think Brian Baldinger did a really good breakdown online, and he was discussing that in like our first, in the Titans' first 20 odd runs, they barely went for more than a yard or two per run, but then the commitment to the run game, they jumped to about 168 yards on like 9 carries or something. And I just thought we didn't attack the game with any sort of purpose, and with what they're trying to do, I guess, with run the ball and look after the clock, when that doesn't work, we end up getting very scattered and scatty, and that ends up basically you end the game thinking, what was the offensive identity there? Because I have no idea what we were even trying to do to win the game.
Yeah, it was just sheer panic. But Wilson, though, with all those attempts and all those, well, just near 30 completions up until the fourth quarter, only one of the wide receivers could catch a pass. Doug Baldwin finished with 15 targets, 10 receptions, 105 yards, and a pretty impressive touchdown catch as well. It's first off on Baldwin. As you said, I think on Facebook or Twitter, it's one of the best Seahawk wide receiver performances in recent time, isn't it?
He was incredible. I mean, he was almost double, triple covered on some of these catches, and Wilson kept going to him, and he kept catching every single catchable target. I think he's like 20 in a row, or something like, he's the second best wide receiver in the league when it comes to catchable targets, I think only behind Antonio Brown and level with AJ Green. And, you know, you're looking at a guy who is becoming just, well, we've said it almost every week, he's just a magnificent player, and it was just our luck that he seemed to get hurt right when we needed some wide receivers. I mean, you could, when Baldwin was out, and even when he was there, you're looking around thinking, there's not a lot else there in the receiving corps. There's good names, but no one seems to be, he didn't seem to be thrown to anyone apart from Baldwin, and I'm not sure whether that was by design or just because he doesn't trust them or what, but there seemed certainly a lack of a bigger guy or something just slightly different to the small nippy wide receiver in Baldwin and Lockett and Richardson, who all did their jobs when the ball was thrown to them. But it all seemed pretty sort of
one dimensional,
monotone.
Yeah, it's shown by the target, how the targets were shared. As I said, Baldwin had 15. The next best wide receiver with targets was Richardson with 7. A lot of them came after Doug Baldwin went out midway through the fourth quarter. Tyler Lockett had 3, and Amara Darbo only had 1 target on Sunday. But also on the offense, Jimmy Graham, after all the few weeks of all the nonsense we've had with him, he ended the day with his most impressive. And again, as we said with the Chris Carson drive at the start of the second half, the way they got involved was encouraging. And it's kind of a case of do that more, isn't it? With Jimmy Graham, 7 catches for 72.
Yeah, I thought Jimmy was really good, and actually he provided a really important foil when Baldwin was out as that sort of reliable guy they could throw it to and, you know, expect it to stick. You know, if Baldwin is injured, maybe even if he isn't injured, I don't necessarily see what we'd be losing by just lining him up outside on a more regular basis and bringing in another tight end or even a 6th offensive lineman to be a tight end that can just chip for you. You know, the guy can catch the ball if he gets it thrown to him in good areas. And for the first time this season, Wilson was hitting him in the numbers outside the red zone, which was cool to see. And I think that's how you end up, you know, getting the best out of him.
Yeah, there's one of Jimmy Graham's catch might have even been his first one of the game in the second on that Chris Carson touchdown drive, where he's up running down the seam and he just boxes out the linebacker or safety like no other Seahawk receiver can do, and that's why you keep Jimmy Graham. That's why. But it's, as I say, just a case of doing it more often. Well, back on the wide receiver.
I mean, from a devil's advocate perspective, imagine if we didn't have him. Like, there would just be nothing in that passing game to hang your hat on if Bolden was double covered. Yeah. I mean, you know, we like guys like Richardson and Lockett, but at the moment, probably largely because of the scheme, they're flashy as opposed to reliable, you know, 8, 9, 10 target a game guys.
Yeah, that kind of leads into what I was about to move on to. With Richardson and Lockett, there is just no separation there. And so obviously, Paul Richardson had a couple, one where Wilson possibly just about underthrew him. That's maybe being a bit harsh, but there's just no separation. Tyler Lockett seems to have a limited radius of catches on, well, he seems to have like dino arms at times when reach up for the ball, and it's just for a team that always says where they put the players in the best position to contribute, they're not really doing that with Lockett and Richardson, are they, when they're asking them to go up and compete down after down after down, and it's something they seem to be struggling with currently, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, they don't really seem like the guys that you can just lob it up to and expect. I mean, Richardson, maybe he does win some nice contested catches, but he's only 6 foot. You know, you're asking quite a lot of that guy to go up and be Dez Bryant. You know, it's impossible. He's not going to do it every time. I'm just trying to look up Tyler Lockett's 440 yard speed, and I can't find it at the moment, which is a bit frustrating. But I think I said to you, and I said to a couple of other guys, that if you, where was it? I'm looking so he runs a 4.440. Which by all accounts is pretty damn good. And if you look at how Atlanta and the Chiefs use Taylor Gabriel and Tyreek Hill, who are, you know, it's a little bit lazy, but by all intents and purposes, similar in terms of dimensions, similar in terms of speed and explosiveness. Yeah. They scheme those guys open. You know, they run plays to get the best out of them. When they do a bubble screen, it has purpose. It's not just sort of flung out there and hoping that a guy can make a block. They seem like they really work on it. And you look at how we use Lockett, and it really feels like a waste of someone who could be so, so explosive for us.
Yeah, it really does. I think the Gabriel thing, I mean, you see in almost every team now has the end around as part of their, I mean, the Cowboys did it a few times, I think, on Monday night as well. And it just seems the best way. Lockett in his rookie year was amazing. When he had the ball in space, as he showed with all the punt and kickoff returns. Obviously, he didn't really do that as much last year. But you'd think with the game-breaking ability that he has, it's almost too obvious, isn't it, to ignore for much longer, that you need to start doing things like that with Lockett and maybe even with Richardson. They just have some pretty impressive speed for on him as well, Adam.
And even if it's not like plays that are definitely going to work, but try a jet sweep. Yeah. See what happens.
Yeah.
You know, Percy Harvin blew the Super Bowl open with a jet sweep just because it made the defense have to stay completely honest to the possibility. Like, if you just try it once, it just gives them something else to think about, as opposed to, you know, three-step drop, try and throw to someone, which is just, it's just not working, and it's not getting the best out of some incredible talent that you've got. I mean, at the minute, you look at someone, you know, let's keep using Hill and Gabriel for as reference points. They would absolutely look like guys on their current teams that would earn a second contract. Whereas Lockett, as much as I love him, if you need to share the money around, would you necessarily give it to him with what they're doing with him at the moment? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's just an absolute cluster at the minute, all over the offense. With wide receivers, with obviously, as Adam alluded to earlier, with questions surrounding Doug Baldwin's status for Sunday night as he ended, sat out the final 6-7 minutes of the game with a groin injury, which according to Ian Rappaport yesterday is going to be a day-to-day deal. Running the ball was not much fun, apart from yet again that first drive in the second half. Chris Carson finishing with 11 design runs for 34 yards. CJ Procise chipped in with 4 rushes for just 9 yards, where he yet again shone as a wide receiver more than anything. And then obviously Russell Wilson scampered for 26 on a further 7. But on Carson, he's not doing too bad with the stuff he's got to run behind. Is that fair, or would you expect more from the Seahawks?
No, I think I think from a rookie, you're probably getting the best you could possibly ask from a guy put in his position, seventh round draft pick. You know, really, let's be honest, seventh round draft pick should not be starting for Super Bowl contenders in week two and week three, but he is, and I think he's doing a pretty good job. I guess the Titans and the balding and stuff that I talked about, it's an interesting case study because you could argue the run game opens up if you keep doing it, but then are we capable of opening it up if we keep doing it? Like, do we not run the ball well because we don't do it enough, or do we not run the ball well because we can't run the ball? And I think that's something that I've been thinking about a lot this week, because I was originally quite happy with going away from the run game as the way to win, but looking at the way the Titans do it, if you do it effectively, especially, you know, a good mobile quarterback and some decent receivers, it can change everything. But I'm wondering if we're good enough to do it or not.
Yeah, I mean, with Tennessee, their rush numbers in the first half were embarrassing, really. If they'd been the other way around, there'd been absolute panic and calls for every coach and the offensive coaching staff to lose their jobs. But as you said, they kept at it, and that third quarter was quite something to watch, because they didn't do anything exotic. They just ran the play they ran with 4 minutes ago in the first quarter, and it just happened to work for a 70-yard touchdown run instead of Michael Bennett or Bobby Wagner knifing through. But yeah, I do think you need to keep going. You need to keep, especially as you say, as a rookie, yet again going back, which always seem to be so far on this week. That first drive in the second half where Chris Carson, and there was a play, I think Abushi was the guy who was a pulling guard, and he'd come around, and he absolutely opened up a lane which Chris Carson possibly hasn't seen since he's been in Seattle, and he got 7, 8, 9 yards. If they can do that consistently, obviously 7, 8 yards a carry is probably slightly ambitious, but it's there's something there in the players they've got at the running back position. And also, you'd expect with all the talk over Cable the last couple of years that the run blocking will catch up at some point, won't it?
You'd hope so, but then you could argue that arguably DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry, when both healthy and on form, are, you know, a good two or three levels above just the pure talent that we've got at running back. So maybe that's an issue as well. I think it's going to take a few more games to see what we've got, because I just can't work out if it's because we're not good at running the ball or we don't do it enough. I guess we'll find out. You know, Sunday's a pretty good barometer of that, you would imagine, because I would expect them to try very hard to establish the run and win it like that.
Yeah, I think that is most definitely the way they're going to be going. Before we move on to the defensive side of the ball, after Sunday, Russell Wilson in 2017, when targeting Doug Baldwin, is 20 for 27, 209 yards and a touchdown, 108.4 passer rating. And as we just talked about Chris Carson, he's the second running back in elusivity, is that the word, Adam?
What, in
rating? But yeah, the 2017 halfback elusive rating, he is second behind Kansas City's Kareem Hunt. He's also 5 points ahead of Marshawn Lynch in that rating, so that's not bad company to be in, because Kareem Hunt just seems to only run 60-yard touchdowns.
Yeah.
which is very, very good for my fantasy team. Anyway, moving on to the defensive side. The run defense was a bit of a worry, but the fact that they came out of the game with not a single sack on Sunday, with all the money and all the talent on up there on the defensive line, that's not good enough, is it, Adam?
No, the defensive one is a really weird one, because they were pretty good in the first half until they gave up that stupid field goal at the end. As a sidebar, I can't imagine that there's a team in the last 3 or 4 years that have given up more points directly after scoring than us. It just seems like whenever we score like a momentum changing touchdown or even a field goal, the other team marches straight back down and scores on us, but whatever. Up until that drive, I was just looking and thinking, so confident, you know, even though they weren't getting the hits, you know, arguably you want to contain Mariota as much as possible, because, you know, if you go too much and they throw a little screen or he gets outside the defensive line, you know, I don't mind them doing that if they're looking to contain, but just fell apart in the second half, and I don't really have an explanation for it. Whether it was either schematic or it was fatigue. It was 108 degrees pitch side, which I guess is something that shouldn't be discounted, but it's 180 degrees for both teams. So I don't know. What did you reckon?
It just seemed really, really sluggish. Slow. I think as the offense peaked, the defense fell apart, and as the offense struggled in the first half, I mean, we talked about the running attack by the Titans in the first half, where it was just they got nothing. It was a lot of TFLs and minimal gains. It was just a very strange. I mean, it's not. I mean, the money and the talent we have on the defensive line, not to even get a. Don't think he even got a pressure or QB hit.
Didn't get a QB hit
on Mariota or something, and that is just really, really frustrating. But as the thing where I think they're lacking is that I know they had Garrison Smith active on Sunday, but there's quite a drop off from the first four, and I think there's also a drop off in trust because Bennett and Averill and Richardson are playing a lot of snaps, possibly more than we expected and they expected them to play, and that clearly had an effect on Sunday. But also another thing on defensive, on those two long touchdowns, Cam Chancellor, Jeremy Lane and KJ Wright could not have played those two touchdowns any less effectively, could they? I mean, Jeremy Lane, he's off on the sideline for half of the run down for DeMarco Murray.
Yeah, he looked like Gareth Bale against Barcelona in that Copa del Rey Cup final goal when he sprinted halfway into Valencia Town Centre before notching. Yeah, and also, I mean, sacrilege to ever have a go at Earl, but Thomas didn't really do anything on the run. Like, he didn't even put himself in a position to be blocked. Like, I'm pretty sure Rishard Matthews would have run through him, but he was sort of like, I don't know, he just stopped trying to tackle the guy, which was a bit odd. That was just a very strange run, but you know, they were so committed to the run, and the number of blockers they got downfield, like, I guess once DeMarco got into the second level, it was always going to be a bit tricky. I think slow and sluggish is a really, you know, good way of putting it. A lot of the guys looked like veterans, which, you know, in some capacity, sometimes that works out really well for you. But you know, it is a young man's game, and you look at the money given to players like Chancellor, who are great players. But I just wonder how many of those guys are truly unique anymore. You know, because as we said before, you know, the game changes and catches up on people very, very quickly.
Yeah, and I think there is. I mean, Cam Chancellor had a bit of a weird couple of plays the week before as well. And in week one, he's the one to keep an eye on because he just seems to be keeps getting in his own way, kind of thing. On he doesn't seem to be having that presence he's had in a couple of years, like matching along with your point. Obviously, another guy on the defensive side who got a lot of attention on Sunday was Richard Sherman. Obviously, the first scoring drive I think for the Titans came about after a very, very tic tac key. Defensive pass interference call on Sherman, then all his helmet came off and all the rest of it. Then he laid into Marcus Mariota just as he touched the sideline paint. What did you make of Sherman's Sunday overall? And obviously, especially the long pass interference, which probably should have been a hold, shouldn't it?
I think in all sports, teams will have divisive players. And if that player is on your team, you are well within your right to absolutely adore him. Even if you know deep down, if you played for anyone else, you would absolutely despise him. And for me, that sums up my feelings about Sherman. I could not love him anymore. And part of the reason is that he backs it up with elite, elite, elite play. He gave up one pass of 17 yards, which was an amazing throw and really good, like, veteran play from Eric Decker. On the sideline, and it was still like in front. It was, you know, Sherman had it under control. It was never going to be a hugely explosive play. The Mariota thing was stupid from him, but often stuff like that the Seahawks have done, and it fires up the whole team and turns the whole game around. So from a risk reward perspective, if you're not going to get ejected, you know, he's as smart a guy as is on the team. By far, you know, there was the play against Buffalo at the end last year when as soon as the Tyrod left the tackle box, he absolutely nailed his guy. And, you know, he knows the rules full well. He wouldn't have hit Mariota if he thought it was going to get ejected for a second unsportsmanlike conduct. I think it's really popular to perpetuate the notion that he's a thug and, you know, it's just all brash and whatever, but he's as cerebral as they come. And you know, I'm going to ride with Sherman wherever he wants to take me. No problem about that.
Yeah, as you say, he does back it up. He continues to back it up every week, and every time he gets an opportunity to talk, he backs it up.
I mean, look at social media, calling him an animal and all that nonsense.
Yeah.
That's exactly what the, you know, uninitiated believe him to be, and they could not be more wrong, and it's just classic nonsense clickbaiting.
Yeah, and it was also a thing where we see him, obviously, three times a week talking to the press. We see all the stuff he does on social media and stuff, but which might be happening for, say, Vontae Davis this week in Indianapolis, but we don't see it. And when you see him do things like Sherman does, like he does mouth off on occasion, it may have a different reaction from us. But yeah, when we're in this crowd, it kind of, he's kind of back into the hilt. But Sherman with the pass interference, this not pass interference. The ball wasn't, he wasn't going to catch that ball. If it's holding, possibly, that isn't as much of a game changing penalty. And then the 15-yard other thing was apparently for his helmet, which is understandable. But the, when they play on the edge like the Seahawks do, like Richard Sherman does as well, it's kind of a, just a bit of a stupid rule. It's like the Ravenelli rule in football where you can't lift your shirt up, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's like people want to say, oh, you know, disgusting behaviour, taking his helmet off. No, it's a 15-yard penalty, and that's what he got. Like,
yeah, and also,
the league has established a rule in order to punish that. So, yeah, you know, what do you want them to do?
Yeah, yeah.
And he took also his helmet off, he got 15 yards. That's the way the game goes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And when Jeremy Lane got done a couple of weeks ago, got ejected from the game, he didn't get a fine. So sometimes the rules are not followed properly, but never mind.
And today, is today fines day? I think it is.
I think it is, NFL, so we'd expect to see.
We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, overall, though, the defense was just a bit sluggish. On the offensive side, who was the one that stood out for you?
Baldwin, and it wasn't even close.
Yeah, Ross posted on Sunday night on the Twitter account that was it four options he had?
Yeah, three too many.
It was, yeah, three too many, and I'm not sure how that ended, but it was weirdly lacking in the Doug Baldwin votes. He was by far the best defensive player. Number 54, isn't it? Again, with eight tackles, three assisted.
I'm not great at noticing the middle linebacker, like on running plays, shutting things down. I never have been. I sort of leave that to you. I thought Sherman had a really good game. Shaq Griffin did well again. You know, he's not giving up big plays. And I think he made loads of tackles, if I'm not mistaken. I thought he played pretty well. Just to scroll way back to our initial conversation, a guy called Michael Sawyer has just posted on Twitter that injuries CJ Process has sustained as a Seahawk: hand, ankle, shoulder, hamstring, hip, groin.
Like so a nursery rhyme.
I mean, that's basically all of the arm that you can do and all of the leg you can do.
Yeah. But also, obviously, people probably know by the time this podcast is out there, but CJ Process has an ankle injury this week and is doubtful to play on Sunday. Which
Sorry, I completely forgot that we discussed that off air, and I've not brought that up yet. Sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm sure it's another game where CJ Process is also reversing back. Just reminded me, Thomas Rawls and Eddie Lacy had a combined one snap on Sunday, so we had, and Trey Madden had two, I think. So for all the running backs we had active on Sunday, we had three of them having three snaps. Yep. Adam.
JD McKissick did a magnificent job as an inactive again.
Yeah, wearing his tracksuit top on the sideline. Especially with Thomas Rawls in particular, it's a weird state of affairs, isn't it? There,
everything is just very strange. And I guess it's probably not too dissimilar to the stuff we've been saying for the last two or three years in the first month of the season. In all of those situations, to a degree, the team has managed to sort itself out. I just wonder if, you know, at some point it's going to be 1 year too many of them working it out. And you know, you hope it's not this year, but you know, eventually there isn't really enough serum in the syringe to you know, jumpstart this team.
Yeah, especially on the offensive side of the ball, more than the defense. I think the defense just had one of those days, didn't they?
Yes, but then let's see. We play teams like Atlanta and Dallas this year. You know, let's see whether it is just one of those days or if they just haven't quite got the legs anymore to compete.
Yeah, and also, just a quick note before we move on to this week's game, the Tennessee Titans, that's a proper legitimate offense and team over that, over there, isn't it?
100%. They've got a really good thing going, and therein lies the absolute joy of drafting a good quarterback early and still being crap in your first year. You know, it's the best way to win in a, or turn your team around in the short term, is to lose with a star quarterback in your first year, because then you get offered an absolute king's ransom from teams in order to take that early pick off you. And you know what the great thing they've done is they've turned all of these picks into good starting talent. And you know, for all we moan about the Seahawks not picking up good players in the draft, it's pretty hard when we're drafting in the high 20s every year to find stars. Yeah. So it's credit to Tennessee for doing what they've done.
It's also very hard to find players that are in the positions we're drafting players in, obviously with Fede and all the rest of it. There's a very, very low hit rate on those players. Even Dallas built all their top-level linemen in the earlier part of the first round, and they with Tyron Smith and Zach Martin being top 15, top 20 picks. But yeah,
I guess you could argue that if you are going to be one of those teams that is drafting late, then you should probably pay money for your lines, and you can probably draft the skill positions and teach them. But I don't know, maybe.
But then you look at
that's a mentality thing.
They don't really do anything of anything on the offensive line, and seem to about survive. But they've got a different species at quarterback, I guess, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, they're just not a real team, let's be honest.
Yeah, well, before we do move on, though, the O-line is getting a lot of flack. Obviously, they only give up one sack. They give up a hell of a lot of hits. Ode Ibushi started at right guard, as what was expected for most last week. It came to fruition on Sunday. There's signs of life and signs of improvement, just not at the rate which is needed. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I thought in pass protection, they were really good. Run blocking is still not there. And you know, you still get the odd, just hilarious, memeable play that the O-line coughs up. But you know, I've said since day one, all I want is mediocre line play, and so I'm not going to complain if that's what I get, because I felt that that's what I got this weekend. And overall, in the passing game, if you are going to chuck it 50 times and you get 50 good offensive line plays, then that's not too bad.
Yeah. I agree with all of that. Moving on, though, and the Seahawks return to primetime football, which is a very late start, which is, after the last few weeks, not exactly ideal or welcome, staying up to 5 o'clock and watching the offense go 3 and out for 3 hours. But yeah, the Indianapolis Colts roll into Seatown on Sunday Night Football.
Hey, this is John Moffitt, and you're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast. Go Hawks!
So yeah, the Colts roll into town when the game was announced as a primetime game, Sunday Night Football, back in April. Obviously, the clear storyline of Wilson versus Luck, which is exhausting at the best of times, was going to be almost unbearable this week. But Andrew Luck's body has let him down. He won't be suiting up on Sunday. It'll be former Patriots quarterback or former NC State quarterback. So the NC State quarterback versus NC State quarterback on Sunday. Jacoby Brissett has stepped in the last couple of weeks and sparked what was an offense which was completely embarrassing in week one against the Rams, as the Rams just had their way with them in week one. Week two, they did somehow find a way to lose against Carson Palmer's overthrows in Arizona before they just about held on in week three at home to the favored Cleveland Browns. But with that Andrew Luck, this team's not nowhere near the same. That's possibly in the same, isn't it, Adam?
I mean, Brissett has certainly given them a spark on offense that Tolzien wasn't capable of doing. You know, I think Brissett scored 2 rushing touchdowns on the weekend. He's getting something out of T.Y. Hilton, which has generally been what makes the Colts good on offense, if you can get Hilton going. And they have got good players at Dante Moncrief. Jack Doyle's a decent tight end. You almost, in a roundabout way, as a Seahawks fan, wish that Luck was playing, because at some point we need to work out what this team is. Playing against Brissett, all due respect, and he may come in and beat us. And if he does, then you know full well what this team is. We're probably going to have a game which is similar to the San Francisco game, where we're not going to get tested enough to know what level we're at. Although, you know, you'll never complain at a win and to get back to 2-2.
Yeah, it is one of those where it's going to answer, might answer some of the questions, it's not answer all of them, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly the way I'd put it.
But also at Brissett, they obviously have Frank Gore, just seems to be running on forever. He's now 34. He's still a running back, elite, starting running back in the NFL, which is almost, at this point in the NFL, it's almost scientifically impossible to have a 34-year-old running back being somewhat effective. He's got 145 yards and two touchdowns on 49 attempts through three games this season. Obviously, a couple of them, they were way behind and just completely abandoned the run. But Frank Gore is, when he's in San Francisco, he was a bit of a pest. He's one of them where he's possibly Marshawn Lynch borderline Hall of Fame territory, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he probably will end up being in the Hall of Fame based on longevity. You know, the number of 1,000-yard seasons is really impressive. He sort of strikes me as like, and this, it might be slightly disrespectful towards him, like the Jermaine Defoe of running backs, whereby he's always very vaunted, you know, really elongated career and always doing a lot of good. But has he ever really been in the top three or four, or, you know, has he ever been a super superstar? I guess he was in San Francisco for a time, which I guess is similar to Defoe, who had a couple of years of real stardom. So yeah, that's my crazy football analogy of the week.
It's not actually too bad. And obviously the only difference is Defoe's probably rinsed the teams he plays for a lot more undeserved money, I think. point. But elsewhere, to Frank Gore on offense, T.Y. Hilton is their number one receiver. And when we last played the Colts back in 2013, he did a job on Sherman, which very few receivers have done over Sherman's career, didn't he?
Yeah, he's always been a stalwart of an Adam's Army fantasy team. and I've always affectionately suggested that TY stands for touchdown, yeah. So touchdown, yeah, Hilton. He's in the Adam's Army ring of honor. His number has been retired. And hopefully he doesn't show up too much on Sunday, because that could, he's the kind of guy that can just blow a game wide open. And if we are struggling to score an offense, you know, if he has one of his, you know, two touchdown, 160 yard games, it could be really tricky. Especially with his ability after the catch.
Yeah, there's some bizarre numbers on the Colts receiving thing. T.Y. Hilton's are 14 catches for 259 yards, 18.5 yards of reception. Dante Moncrief has 5 catches for 112 and 22.4 yards reception, which is, that's just bizarre. It's all or nothing, it seems, on the Colts. Offensive tight end, they've got Jack Doyle, and also I found two familiar names on the Colts depth chart. Adam Brandon Williams, who was the Seahawks' fourth tight end, or third tight end, ahead of Nick Vinette last year. And obviously, Darryl Daniels, is the former Husky, is a Colts tight end. He's had one catch through the first three games for 6 yards. But the offense...
Am I not right in saying they've also got Robert the Turbo Turbin as well?
They have, yeah. And also Christian Michaels on their injured reserve list as well. So it's a... very strange, and I believe they signed Cyril Grayson this week as well. So
you're right.
There is a lot of Seahawks, also, and one of the.
It's like watching Sunderland against Man United.
Well, those, yeah, it's one of the old Seahawks scouts is obviously up high in that front office now as well, alongside their GM, who I can't remember the name of. But on offense, though, the
GM is it's like Bullard.
That's it, Bullard. Chris Bullard.
Chris Bullard, that's
the
one.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the assist, Mr. Nathan. But on offense, it possibly will be a case of getting to and keeping Brissett in that pocket, won't it?
Yeah, well, you'd hope that defensive line, with all the money that's in it, there can't be a defensive line in the league that's got more money invested in it, that there'll be a pride situation and they'll want to lay some serious licks on Brissett. And I would expect that to happen. So we'll see what improvements they can make in a week.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. On the defensive side, though, they have Vontae Davis keeping it all together at cornerback. I think he's playing.
Speaking of defense, and this is something that I've thought for maybe a little while, what do you make of Chris Richard as a defensive coordinator?
What's the word? Limited, I think, compared to the two guys who... But before him, especially Dan Quinn, I think. By every game you watch,
there's not the creativity.
No, there seems to be a shorter fuse, I think. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've seen a few flare-ups. We saw him going absolutely ballistic. Was that on Sunday when he met Barmy after a long completion? But yeah, just I think after coming after Dan Quinn, I think he was faced a bit of a tough task. But yeah, there's possibly a reason that he's still the defensive coordinator, to be quite honest.
I mean, it's always going to be Pete Carroll's defense and whatever team he's the head coach of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I just wonder if we spend a little bit too much time in base. You know, so many times the color commentator will laud the Seahawks, they don't do a lot on defense. It's all very simple. And I just wonder if maybe the game has caught up on that a bit and now it's time to get a bit more creative.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that, I think. But unless you can't really say he hasn't got the weaponry to do all that, because all the money they spent, obviously, in the defensive line, they spent all the draft picks this year pretty much on every defensive back in college football last year. So it's not like he hasn't got the tools to play with, which arguably Tom Cable and Darrell Bevell haven't had. I know that's a bit of a stretch, but when you compare it to what Rashard has got to work with, it's a fair correlation to make, isn't it?
He's unlikely to ever have more money invested in a unit that he coaches. That's what you'd have to say.
Yeah, yeah. I'd go along with that. But on the Colts side of the defense, they spent a high pick on Malik Hooker this year, the rookie safety out of Ohio State. He's already got his hands on two interceptions. Rasheem Malvin at left corner has two interceptions, but a lot of this defense is of a lot of journeymen and not many stars. Henry Anderson's possibly the most prominent star on the defensive line, but there's not much there on the defensive side in terms of banner names, is there, Adam?
No, there's not. I mean, Malik Hooker looked so good. He made such a beautiful play against Matt Stafford to pick him off. He covered so much ground, but like he was gliding. But Ryan Grigson left that team in absolute disarray, and I think it's going to take a couple of years for them to get back into it. And it may not be the worst thing for Andrew Luck's future if he does, come back in week eight and they're, 2-6 and they just sit him for the year. It's negative. It's negative to think like that. And there's only so much time these guys have got in their career. But you just wonder if it looks like a team that's going to take a couple of years to get back going. And I think Ballard started off well, but he's got a lot more work to do.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it's come out today that Andrew Luck won't practice this week and probably won't practice next week as well. So he's out at least, I think their bye is the same week as ours in week six as well. So he's not going to play until late to mid-October. And yeah, with them sitting at 1-2, you'd hope they'd be sitting at 1-3 come Monday morning. There's going to be, I think, the same in Arizona with David Johnson as well. There's going to come a point where is it really worth risking the franchise player for the next 5-10 years just to go from 8 to 10 in next year's draft? That is probably
especially given Luck has now had almost 2 years of this.
And also given what we saw from one of their division rivals last week, they are probably, unless Mariota goes down again, they're not going to catch the Titans this year, are they? So there's not much.
No, but I also don't think they catch the Texans, no, to be honest. And even the Jaguars have had two of the best wins of the season, punctuated with also the worst loss probably as well. They're another random team, but I would suggest they've got more overall talent from back to front. I think the Colts are talent wise clearly the fourth best team in that division.
I'd agree with it. Overall, I think and obviously the defensive side for the Jaguars really does put that team up, because without Allen Robinson, that offense doesn't have much. It's probably a wash with the Colts with T.Y. Hilton and obviously Fournette's possibly a better running back at this stage than Gore is. But yeah, I think the defensive side of the Jags, obviously as they showed on Sunday at Wembley, really just give that team a chance. So what really did the on offense against that no-name defense, really, what do the Seahawks need to do and what are you looking for them to do on Sunday night?
I think I will be very disappointed on next week's podcast if I don't see real strides and this team looking like contenders. In fact, disappointed is the wrong word. I imagine I'll be very circumspect because I'm starting to have my doubts as to what this team actually is and whether they are as good as we hope. I guess if we don't see another good performance on Sunday, maybe it's another nail in that coffin. But if we do, then, and it's a proper performance, not one that just, dominates or keeps a poor team at arm's length. You know, go and put some points on there. You know, the Colts conceded 40 odd points against the Rams, and they're the Rams. So you know, go and do the same thing here in a big atmosphere. I think that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking to see some proper football again.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Just the execution that we saw in the fourth quarter, especially on Sunday, creeping up from the get-go on Sunday night will be massive. And if Doug Baldwin doesn't play, there's going to be a lot on Lockett Richardson and you'd expect Amara Darbo, isn't there?
And Jimmy Graham, who I would think will take the place of basically wide receiver number one. It was nice to see Luke Wilson getting a catch again. His actual number of Seahawks catches is amazingly low considering how many great plays he's made. I always like him in the passing game. I think he's maybe underutilized, but there's probably a reason for that. And maybe I just think he's better than he actually is. I don't know.
Yeah. possibly the reason we got him back for vet minimum. But as you say, he has made some pretty important big plays for the Seahawks over his time. As the Seahawks, obviously, the NFC Championship game, front and centre on that.
Also, Beastquake 2, if that had never happened, you'd remember Luke Wilson's amazing play. Our first touchdown in that game in Arizona as memorable. It was a tight end, ran about 95 yards.
And ran away from DBs as well, I think. Yeah,
but not the best DB of all time, Patrick Peterson, of course.
No. But Patrick Peterson did give up the catch, though, so he's fine. He's still number one.
Of course.
Yeah. On the defensive side, you just really want to see more from the investments, don't you?
Yeah, I want to see a smothering defense. I don't want to see more than 10 points given up. And I don't want to see more than 250 total yards against.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Over the first three games, the Indianapolis Colts have scored 6 touchdowns, and the longest one being a 61-yard touchdown by T.Y. Hilton. Everything else has been within the red zone, which is a place where the Seahawks defense, even with all the yards the Titans got us, and they haven't spent much time in this so far this season, Adam.
No, I mean, the touchdowns we've given up have been quite long plays, 3 of them at the weekend, from memory. I want to see some good situational sport, like giving up the field goal at the end to go down to 9-7 at halftime and not go in with a halftime lead. Like, that needs to be cut out. Conceding a crap touchdown to Rishard Matthews after taking the lead against Chris Carson, that's just got to stop. It takes me back to Matt Bryant in the NFC divisional round against Atlanta. You know, score and then give one up. I don't know if there's a concentration issue, but it just does seem to happen so often. Arizona last year after Hauschka missed the extra point. Even Green Bay in the championship game Luke Wilson 2-point conversion, give up a field goal. It just seems to happen insanely regularly.
It is a weirdly consistent occurrence. Especially for all the, as you would be, that's like half dozen things you just mentioned there, and it's probably not even the half of it of what we've done. Even in like minor games where we've took the lead by 24 points, we then give up a touchdown. Like 49ers game last year at home when we gave up 2 garbage time touchdown drives and really did boost Carlos Hyde's numbers. Bizarrely. But yeah, on offense, who's obviously, I think this might be number 88 for you, but is on offense, is that the guy you're going to be looking for most intently?
It's 88, it's 32, and it's 3.
I think 3, 88, and yeah, it's boring to stay the same, but yeah, I think a lot will depend on what Doug Baldwin does. Pete Carroll said that it's just said that he won't be practicing today, but it doesn't mean anything for
Sunday. In my opinion, he shouldn't be out. He should be dressed and he should be used only in case of emergency. If he's got a groin strain, you know, best one in the world. And I know these guys play hurt to a degree that, you know, they all work, you know, you're hurt after the first play of the season and you carry on being hurt. You don't mess around with a groin strain. Have him out there and dressed if you need him to. But, you know, if you've not got enough talent to beat a poor defense in the Colts, then, you know, you've obviously got bigger problems than not having Doug Baldwin out there, I would suggest.
Yeah, I'd agree. On defense, the one you're going to be keen in on, Adam?
Frank Clark, who has been modest this season, I would say, to be fair. And for a guy who does carry baggage, whether you want to talk about it or not, you have to hold him to a higher standard because those that carry baggage need to perform more to legislate it. So I want to see a two sack game from him.
Yeah, I think next to him, I think Sheldon Richardson. I think he's it's a lot of fun watching him on the just lining up, but he needs to start showing. I think having Sheldon Richardson in a team where he gives up all those yards they gave up in the second half last week, that's a bit of a worry. So I think 91 on the prime time stage and against the team he's had pretty good success against in the Colts as well, where he's a New York Jet and Cooper the guy. I'm looking out for. Also, Shaq Griffin might get his first career interception, looking at the amount that the Colts quarterbacks have thrown through 3 weeks. Well, obviously, we're not always a fully slanted podcast, the Only Possession podcast. So I had the chance to sit down with a UK Colts fan. So here's that conversation with Ollie Dawes.
Right, so here on the Possession podcast, we're going to keep doing it. We did it last week with Ross talking to a Titans fan. This week, it's my turn to talk to a UK Indianapolis Colts fan. Joining me now is Mr. Ollie Dawes, the man who a few years ago I submitted my first college draft article to. I think it was on Aaron Donald for Inside the War Room. How are we, Ollie?
Yeah, not too bad. I actually remember first, you know, getting to know you through that website.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And obviously, the NFL UK market and all those rambling Google Hangouts came from that.
Yeah. Feels like a long time ago now.
It does. So, just quickly, how did you, why the Colts and how did you get following the sport?
Okay, so following the sport, I couldn't sleep one night at university and put on the Super Bowl, the Green Bay Packers against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and decided to just get fully into it after that. And why the Colts is a question I ask myself all too often. But it was that me and my friend, who both watched the Super Bowl that year, were trying to pick a team to support, and the only player we'd heard of was Peyton Manning. So we picked the Colts, and then he had like 3 neck surgeries and never played for the Colts again. So none of it's gone to plan.
No. So how was the off season for the Colts? Obviously, a lot of it was around the health of number 12, Andrew Luck. But outside of that, obviously you had a new GM, but still the same coach. That was a strange time and strange decisions there, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought when they got rid of Gregson, they would have also got rid of Pagano, and hoped they would. I just felt that regime had run its course at that point. But Ballard has come in and already done some good stuff in the draft and in free agency. I'm still just not sold on Pagano, though, and feel that this probably is his last year.
Yeah, do you think it was just a case of giving Harbaugh another year to get Michigan out of his system? He would surely be top of the list.
The main names that you hear are Harbaugh, David Shaw from Stanford. I mean, I think they would probably go for Harbaugh, but yeah. There are claims that looks closer to Shaw than he ever was with Harbaugh, and God only knows. If it's one of the two, then they've both worked with Luck before, so you can see it be either of them.
Yeah, the thing with Harbaugh is that myself and most Steelers fans spent 3 or 4 years hating him, and then we spent the last 2 or 3 years just like enjoying everything. Because he was moaning about the medical table at Purdue this weekend, so... It's just like with all the stuff we get from players on the Seahawks, it's quite refreshing to watch a player lose his mind about something so menial, really.
Yeah, it does feel like it would go either really, really well or really, really bad.
Yeah, you never know. Maybe that'll be the thing that convinces Jim Irsay to sign Colin Kaepernick.
Well, fingers crossed. I've only been... for 6 months.
So obviously 3 weeks into season, no Andrew Luck so far. He isn't playing this week and doesn't look like he's playing in week 5 either. So how was your Scott Tolzien experience in week 1?
Absolutely horrible. the weird thing was that day, as you know, I was at a wrestling show, so I couldn't watch the first half of that game. And came out of Alexandra Palace to just a host of messages about how bad Scott Tolzien was playing. So none of it was a surprise.
Yeah. So what has Brissett been that much of an improvement, or just anything was an improvement?
Yeah, I think Brissett has been a really big improvement, both in terms of throwing it and as a rushing threat. You saw his spin move for the touchdown against Cleveland Browns last Sunday. He's a better thrower of the ball than Tolzien. He's just altogether a different threat than we had in week one. And they just couldn't start Tolzien again after how bad he was against the Rams. They just couldn't.
Yeah. So with outside of Brissett, obviously Frank Gore is familiar to Seahawks fans, and he had a habit of getting a lot of yards against the Seahawks when he was a 49er. It's pretty remarkable though that he's still as productive as he is in 2017 NFL at the age of 34, isn't it?
Yeah, you keep expecting him to, like, the wheels to come off, but he's still churning yards like he was 5 or 10 years ago. The run blocking hasn't been that bad so far this year. Like, Gore's been able to get some good running going, and we've also got Marlon Mack around to come in if we need him to. So yeah, Gore, there's some fans that want us to trade him so that he can play on a contending team like in the late stages of his career and try and get him a Super Bowl ring, but I don't really see that happening.
No, I think he's quite content, because obviously you signed Andre Johnson when you just signed Miami product.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a few weeks. So and up behind him is Marlon Mack, who was a lot of fun at Florida. Is he sort of marginalised with Gore around, or has he got like a role even just 3 weeks in? Has he got something that can be built on?
His role at the moment is, it's almost like they don't know what to do with him.
That sounds familiar.
like they drafted, because I think the story is that they were going to draft either him or the running back at Kansas City, Kareem Hunt. They were going to draft one of them too, and Ballard picked Mack. But yeah, at the moment, I think he will be good under a different set of coaches, because at this point, I just don't know if they know what to do with him.
No.
But they keep doing this. They'll run Gore outside. Like, they'll pitch it to him. It's like, it's just not his game.
No, that never has been. He's always downhill. Obviously, we don't play the Colts very often, every 4 years. Like, 4 years ago, we played you. The Colts did win at Lucas Oil. I think it's ended a unbeaten start to that season, so which ended up in the Super Bowl win against the Broncos. Now, that day at Lucas Oil, though, T.Y. Hilton absolutely had his three-course meal with Richard Sherman that day. Is he still the, obviously, still number one for the Colts?
Yeah, but there has been a strange story around him this season, in that after our last game, the Indianapolis Star, I think it was Greg Doyle, wrote an article about how T.Y. Hilton was a diva and that he wasn't trying hard enough, because I think he fell short like by a yard of getting a first down on one play. And it sparked this whole article of how he and Dante Moncrief are divas. And then Hilton responded by just tearing up the Cleveland Browns on Sunday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Brissett seems to like, you know, the fairly intermediate to deep throws to Hilton. So I am hoping that we can get some joy out of that like we did in, I want to say 2013 was the last time we played.
Four years ago. The weird score was like 12-0. It's on YouTube. I flicked through it earlier. It was 12-0 after about 4 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a very strange game. Yeah. Anyone else to keep that Seahawks fans should keep an eye out for on Sunday? Obviously, none of the names really pop outside of the ones we just mentioned. But anyone else?
Yeah, this is it. Like, even Jack Doyle's been a solid tight end, but he had a really poor game last week. Dante Moncrief wasn't actually listed as a starter last week. They started Kamar Aiken instead. So he's got a lot to prove in what I think is a contract year. The offense isn't exciting by any stretch of the imagination at the moment, but I'd say it's the speed of Hilton and Brissett's ability to scramble and get yards with his feet that will probably keep the offense going, really.
Yeah, so in Seattle, obviously, there's a lot of talk, debate and groaning and everything else on the offensive line. It also appears from some of your tweets and retweets that it's the same deal with your offensive line in Indianapolis. Is that the case, or is it a different deal with your O-line?
I mean, it's been the same for since we drafted on Julian. Some of them get stick where I don't think they deserve it. So Anthony Costanzo is a decent NFL left tackle, but if he gives up one bad play, it's suddenly that we should cut him, we should do this, we should do that. And it's like, there are a lot worse tackles in the NFL starting every week than Anthony Costanzo. Jack Muhor is good. Kelly has been injured, so it's always like a revolving offensive line where one week there's always somebody injured and somebody who has to come in and fill in at right tackle or right guard. So it's been a little bit patchwork, but they're just about scraping by at the moment.
Yeah, so this sounds very familiar. I think we've got four of the worst left tackles, if that's possible. We're playing all across the line. On the defensive side, Malik Hooker was your early pick in the draft last April, and he's hit the ground running with two interceptions through three games, isn't he?
Yeah, really good last two games for Malik Hooker. I think the secondary as a whole has been pretty good. I mean, Quincy Wilson has come in and done well. Malik Hooker, even Rashawn Melvin had a good game last week, and he wasn't really considered as like a major part, but he stepped up with Vontae Davis out injured. So, yeah, I'd say of the sort of pleasant surprises of the season, I'd say it probably is the secondary so far.
Yeah. So who obviously, same thing on the offense, who should Seattle players be wary of? Myself and Adam looked through the roster earlier on, and there's not a lot of familiar names outside of Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's not. I think the big thing that we always called for when Grigson was in charge was just difference makers on defense, just somebody who can make a play. I think they do have that now with Malik Hooker, who can intercept passes, and Quincy Wilson can, his ball skills aren't terrible either. John Simon has actually had a pretty good start to the season as an edge rusher who we picked up from, I want to say, the Houston Texans. Jonathan Hankins doing okay as a nose tackle, but yeah, it's not a defense littered with players that you'd be fearful of. Certainly not like the Seahawks defenses.
Yeah, the Seahawks defense had a bit of a rough one last week. So what is the deal with Andrew Luck? And how do you see them dealing with it going on? Because obviously, hopefully, for our case, the Seahawks win on Sunday, you're 1-3, you easily could be way out of it in the South. Do you think there'll be something where they consider just writing this year off for Luck and going again next year? Or do you think Pagano will just play him regardless?
To the first point of what's going on with Andrew Luck, I'm not even sure the Colts know at this point. it's just been so baffling. Of news was pretty thin on the ground over preseason and training camp, and nobody seemed to know when he'd be back, and still nobody seems to really know. I know they're saying week six, but I don't know if you can throw him in that soon. And like you say, if they get to week six and they've only won once, then what is the upside of throwing Luck back in? I know you can get him some reps and test out his shoulder, but at the same time, you're running a big risk of getting him injured again in games that ultimately don't matter. I think that most fans, if it does get to that point where they've won one game by the time Luck comes back, they'd probably rather have the higher pick and just don't risk. The worst thing then would be to go like 7-9 and end up with a pick that's, what, between 13 and 16 or whatever, and just end up with a decent first-round pick compared to getting somebody who can make a huge, huge difference for a team that's still sort of retooling.
Yeah. So with or without Luck, How's your confidence levels for the season as it goes?
Not good, because it's still Chuck Pagano. Like, the only reason they beat the Cleveland Browns last week was because Pagano ran out of time to lose it. I've seen that performance from the Colts so many times. Where there'll be two scores up going into halftime, and everybody's feeling pretty confident about it, and then Pagano will suddenly try and just see out the game. And it's just like, you could see it coming where the Browns were going to get momentum back because we just weren't doing anything.
Yeah.
And I've seen it so many times. And I legitimately, even against this Cleveland Browns team, I thought they were going to throw it away just because I know they've done it before with Pagano doing what he does.
So what is it like being a home underdog against the Cleveland Browns? It's a rare occurrence in recent years.
That's how bad it's got. But at the same time, you had like Broncos fans taking the mick out of the Colts for cutting Peyton Manning 5 years ago, saying how they did it to win Super Bowls, and then they're a home underdog against Cleveland Browns. But that doesn't really sum up everything that's happened in between that, does it? They did get a really good quarterback. It's just that he's injured.
but it hasn't gone exactly as hoped when you took Andrew Luck. Obviously, no knock on Andrew Luck, but it hasn't gone on the ascension that possibly many people inside and outside of Indy expected. Is that fair?
That is fair, but I think it is highlighted by the poor talent around him that Gregson brought in. So the big one is obviously the first round pick for Trent Richardson, which is just...
That's a Saskatchewan Rough Rider running back.
I was just going to say, I saw his back, and it just brought up all these horrible, horrible memories of 4 years ago.
Yeah. But
even beyond that, like, the 2013 draft was a complete disaster. Like, there isn't a single player from that draft on the team at the moment. Like, I'm trying to think what that draft was. We picked Bjorn Werner in the first round. We didn't have a second round pick because we traded it for Vontae Davis. And then we picked Hugh Thornton and Khalid Holmes. It was just baffling, absolutely baffling. We just wasted so many years of Andrew Luck with Gregson making just bizarre picks.
So what? I think I know the answer to this question. So what's your confidence level about for Sunday?
Very, very low.
are you going to stay up and watch it? Or I mean, I know you're like me, a bit of a night owl.
Yeah, I would imagine. I can't see any reason why I wouldn't be watching it.
It's a weird weekend with no WWE pay-per-view as well. So
yeah, it's strange, but we do only have another week to wait.
yeah. So
you're never too far away from
that. No. It's like a rat in a rat, really. So from the indie Colts point of view, what's your thoughts on the Seahawks in general? But obviously, the Seahawks entering week four, a bit of a riddleless mess at times so far, but what's the opinion from your side of the field?
I mean, from the outside looking in, there seem to be big problems offensively.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem that Russell Wilson's really got going yet, and just the offensive line seems somehow worse than ours.
Mm. Was it Ross called it last week an exotic experience to our offensive line, which it works.
It just seems like they've put a bunch of turnstiles on the offensive line. It's just people going through at will. But I do still think that there are pieces on that defense that will give people nightmares heading into that game. They may not be the same defense that they were when they beat the Broncos in the Super Bowl, but it's still littered with players who can make a difference. It's not quite as daunting facing the Seahawks now as it would have been maybe 2 years ago, but the expectations are tempered somewhat because we do still just have Jacoby Brissett at quarterback and sort of a patchwork team on both sides of the ball. So it would be a surprise if we got anything out of it, but on any given Sunday, as they say.
Yeah, so obviously this is something I realised earlier. It's a NC State quarterback versus NC State quarterback. That's the, it's a very rare thing. But also,
don't,
how I mean,
don't
I mean,
get any of them.
No. NC State quarterbacks, really. How disappointed are you that we haven't had a week of Luck v. Wilson, by the way?
Yeah, really, really devastating. I was just remember being so sick of that argument. We haven't even played the Seahawks for 4 years, and I'm sick of that argument.
Yeah, it's sick. It's exhausting from certain people on social media. It's just exhausting.
But like, I always think of it like I only got into the sport in 2011 and caught like a few years of the Brady Manning debate. Yeah, yeah, and just think how many times that got brought up in the years. So. Maybe it's not that bad.
No, yeah, but there is also it's sort of in name, like Messi, Ronaldo. Just like you kind of just got to enjoy both of them, didn't you? Really, obviously when Luck is able to play. Like,
for a while, it was all Luck and Robert Griffin III, and that died out very,
very quickly.
So they just moved on to whichever other quarterback was drafted in 2012.
Yeah, well, 2 years ago, the AFC West was referred to as the best division in football, and now. It could have another team make the playoffs with a 7-9 record. So it's not for long in the NFL, and that's very true all aspects of it. So quickly before we wrap up and get to the point, to be fair, there's one point that's going to be on really looking forward to you trying to explain. What's your prediction for Sunday? Your realistic one and your hopeful one.
Sorry, you cut out there, Steve.
What's your prediction for Sunday?
It's so hard to see us doing anything notable. I could see maybe like a 10-14 point win for the Seahawks. I just think that I can see this being the game where the Seahawks offense clicks, whilst our defense has shown a little bit more than I thought they would, especially in the secondary. I just don't think we'll have enough to really hurt the Seahawks this time.
Would your confidence sway any if it was a home game for the Colts? Obviously, it's a bit of a... I mean, I've been in Centric Field when it's a primetime game, and you've got the extra 2 or 3 hours to drink. It's a lively atmosphere, shall we say. Do you think it would have been any different if it was vice versa?
Maybe, but I still just think that your confidence is always pretty low when your quarterback isn't fit and you're looking at second stringers and people you've got in a trade from the Patriots for nothing. So it's hard to be really confident when you know that your best player isn't there.
Yeah, it is a bit of a shame in one way that it's not Luck v. Wilson. I think I'm sure NBC are delighted that they've got a struggling Russell Wilson against New England Patriots fourth choice quarterback. So
NC State quarterback. Yes, NC State.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If Al Michaels assistant, I don't really know why he would be, but if he is, you got your storyline to beat the drum with on Sunday night. So if people, Seahawks fans, are gentle and in no way overreact, if people do want to overreact and come find you on social media, where do they go to, Wally? What's your at?
Oh no. I didn't know if you were going to ask me this. I'm at wrestling shows all the time, and I don't know how to articulate what my Twitter handle is. my Twitter handle is, I mean, what do I even call it? Sawadilo. I don't even know.
So Ollie had a run in about a year ago, now, isn't it?
Just over a year ago, I got suspended from Twitter.
So is if you want to go find Ollie, it's Ollie Dawes backwards. So
yeah, that's SWADYLLO.
Yeah. So and if you want to go find the other one, it's was it Monday Night Dawes? Monday Night Dawes or something?
Yeah, Monday Night Dawes, but that died in a tragic death.
Yeah, that's what happens when you share links to things on social media, boys and girls.
Don't share links to UFC fights.
Very short UFC fights as well.
Very, very, very short.
So anywhere else that people can catch your musings and things? Obviously, Ross, who I also host with, is a wrestling fan as well. I know you try and cover the nonsense that is WWE.
Yeah, I cover Raw and SmackDown for the Daily Mirror and football for Here Is the City, and you'll find me just here and there, I suppose.
Yeah, in random warehouses in Wolverhampton, which is where
I'm from. In random warehouses in Wolverhampton, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Massive thanks, Ollie, for coming on and giving your unique point of view to everything that is Indianapolis Colts. Enjoy the game if you can on Sunday. As I say, I'm not really looking forward to it much myself as a spectacle. Obviously, if Celtics win, it'll be worthwhile staying up till 5 o'clock. Last time we had a Sunday night game, it finished 6-6. So anything is an improvement on that, and anything is an improvement on the mood I was in, waking up after like 2 hours sleep on Monday morning. But,
yeah, but I thought the Rams and the 49ers would be a terrible game.
That's very true.
I didn't bother staying up for it because I knew I was heading to Wolverhampton the next day. Yeah. I woke up to see the score, was just wondered what the hell had gone on.
I watched it. I'm still not too sure how that happened. Todd Gurley had 5 touchdowns and a yards per carry of like 2.9, which is just the strangest thing ever. It's the most Rams thing ever, but enjoy the game on Sunday, and hopefully the rest of the season you don't be a underdog to the Browns in a good few years anyway.
I just want to see how many times we can be a home underdog this season against how bad team.
Right, thank you very much, Ollie.
Thanks, Jay.
Moving on, massive thanks to Ollie for jumping on. He, as I said, he was the person who I wrote the first draft article about a few years ago for Second City Fanatics and Inside the War Room. So thanks for that, and also everyone who's ever read any of my draft stuff. It's him, it's Ollie who got to blame. But yeah, moving on, talking the draft stuff, the college game and the college season is starting to ramp up. Moving into week 4, is it, Adam? Week 5?
Of college, week 5.
Yeah, week 5. And obviously, last week, we picked out a few games and a few players, and one of those players was Dakota Allen for Texas Tech, the linebacker who played at East Mississippi last year and was featured on Last Chance U. He had an interception on the first offensive play of the game and went on to win Defensive Player of the Week for the conference, which Texas Tech play in. Elsewhere, obviously, Penn State and Iowa, Saquon Barkley looks like the best player, the best running back in the country by quite some distance. But this week, the game slate seems to be a bit better. On Thursday night, Friday morning, Texas at Iowa State, the player to look out for is the Texas offensive lineman, Connor Williams. Obviously, there's a lot of talk with Seahawks and offensive lineman. That will be the player to watch out for there. Sunday morning, Clemson and Virginia Tech. Clemson have the wide receiver Deion Kane, and Virginia Tech have the long and impressive cornerback safety Brandon Faison, who's a redshirt senior, 6'2", 197 pounds, who's in his 5 years so far of his college career has 41 pass breakups and just 5 interceptions, which weirdly all 5 interceptions came in his first year at Virginia Tech. And as Virginia Tech, he also has to wear number 31, doesn't he, coming from Virginia Tech. But that's another player to look out for. There is a better slate of games all on BT Sport, but we will continue to focus on a couple of teams and players as the season moves on. Back onto the podcast this week. True or false, Adam?
Well, I was going to go true or false. If you drop CJ ProSize and a light bulb from a first floor window, the light bulb would end up better off. But I think that's probably a little bit harsh. What will I go with? True or false? Deshaun Watson. No, he can't because of Kareem Hunt. I was going to go Deshaun Watson will win Offensive Rookie of the Year, but that's just not going to happen. The Cincinnati Bengals have turned their season around, or will turn the season around, with the sort of forcing of Joe Mixon as their running back number one.
It's almost like you've got him in a few fantasy teams.
Allegedly.
I don't think so. I think there's a lot more issues. We've mentioned the last couple of weeks about how good Tony Romo is on commentary. Apparently on on Sunday, he said that the Bengals had worked their way through their, had probably worked through their scripted plays when they got all their 14 points. It'd be interesting to see what they do off script. They had 3 more points in the game, so he's legitimately like the Mystic Meg of color commentators. He's so good. I think he yet again called the play. And also, if you go back and listen to the Geronimo Allison long catch which set up the game-winning field goal overtime, he's so excited.
He sounded like Ray Hudson, the American football the, like, commentator, screaming.
It's so good. But yeah, it's ridiculous how he started off and calling out that they're going to struggle off script is
Dalton's really killing that team, isn't he? You can't have hair like that with the fade up to the skin by the ear if you're not going to be good. You just can't. You can't, like, you can only have that sort of hair if you're going to be good.
That's a really, really precise slam.
Just look at it. I mean, it's so perfectly manicured, even after it's on had a helmet on. It looks like it's almost like a plastic mask. It's only Toby Alderweireld's hair stays as straight as that during a sports game. But if you're going to have that lid, you've got to perform.
Yeah, I haven't really focused on Andy Dalton's hair, apart from just more that he's not very good.
You watch football in weird ways, if that's not what you're noticing.
My true or false this week is Thomas Rawls will not be on the Seahawks roster this time next year.
Ooh. This is his third year?
Yeah.
So I'm going to go false because I can't imagine you'll get that much of a trade. He'll be in his rookie year, so he'll want to perform. And I don't think we can focus too heavily on running backs in the draft next year. So I reckon it'll be Carson, Rawls, plus maybe one free agency guy and one draft guy.
Yeah. The CJ Pro, it's really strange. We're 3 weeks into the season. You can make solid arguments that 3 of the 4 running backs currently on roster, don't think they've called up Mike Davis yet. But 3 of the 4 running backs, 4 of the 5 if you include the joker that is McKissick, you can easily make a case that none of them will be here come February, March. You all right?
That's really made me laugh. Because now I'm just thinking of it is a banter merchant in my head, McKissick, which is tickling me. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing's a farce. Get Troymaine Pope back.
Well, that's another one who's just been called up to the Colts this week, is our Troymaine Pope. That's another former Seahawk who's going to be... That's a really strange amount of Seahawks, or ex-Seahawks on that side of the field. But yeah, if they cut Christian Michael at the stage, they cut Christian Michael, who was a second-round pick, they're not going to hold fire on cutting Thomas Rawls if he... isn't able, once he gets a chance, to stay on the field, as he hasn't really showed so far through 3 years. Obviously, he broke his ankle when the world was at his feet, really, in his rookie year. Didn't really get going last year and had one snap on Sunday. One snap. I don't think he had to carry one snap on Sunday. So it's a very strange one. Also, I know Gordon Wright would be listening. Royce Freeman's in this draft class, and that would just be a hell of a lot of fun. Because he's just a touchdown machine for
LeVon Coleman on the other side of the the Oregon Huskies debate. Yeah. Who I love watching him play as well.
Yeah. Also, the Huskies seem to have just the offense that we all kind of want to see the Seahawks have. They're just so decisive and so can't think of the word, but yeah, the offense is just clean. That's it. Just clicks. Without much fuss or bluster. But yeah, to wrap up though, we'll go for where you can catch and get hold of us. We will be back with another podcast next week previewing the game against the Rams, I think it was. And then, in inverted commas, looking forward to that one. And then obviously the bye week comes after. We're trying to get some people to come on and chat anything but the Seahawks, probably at that point of the season. But if you want to catch all of us, you can via Podbean on thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com, on iTunes, The Pedestrian Podcast, on Instagram, at The Pedestrian Podcast, on Twitter, it's at Seahawkers UK, on Facebook, it's the UK Seattle Seahawks fans, on Twitter, personally, it's at Stu_Court, at Adam D. Nathan, and at Ross Bowne 1984. And until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks! Getting so good at that now.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champions.